Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for frequenting our sponsors and supporters. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We're going to start off, first off, this week we have had we've returned 20 hostages Hamas.
We've had a peace deal, or the first stage of a peace deal. There is a concept in Islam called hudna, which means calling a truce while you rearm.
Makes me think you don't think it's going to stand.
No, it isn't.
Well, the next step is for Hamas to put down their weapons.
And right now they're killing people in the streets. They're having public executions of anyone they think may have colluded with the Israelis. And there's a gang war going on in Gaza also. Hamas has probably intentionally killed more Gazans than the Israelis did accidentally. They're not a peaceful people. They're not going to lay down their weapons. And we got the hostages back, but I'm afraid the IDF eventually is going to have to go in there and clean the place out and put somebody other than Hamas in charge. Now, I'm going to do a little history. In 2005, Israel totally withdrew from Gaza. They literally forcibly removed all Israelis from Gaza. The Palestinian Authority was elected by the people in Gaza to govern. In 2006, Hamas took over the government, and there was a bit of a shady election, but they took it over. That was the last election. In 2005, when the, quote, Palestinians, unquote, took over Gaza, the region was supported by greenhouses that the Israelis had built that fed Gaza and the neighboring area. The first thing that the people who came in did was destroy the greenhouses, use the water pipes as rocket launchers, and rocket attacks on Israel began in 2000. Well, they had begun in 2001, and they continued through the Palestinian Authority and Hamas. During this whole time, Hamas trained school children to be martyrs and to be terrorists. This peace deal is a wonderful idea. Thank God they got the hostages back, but I'm not optimistic.
Well, I think what was striking about it was the fact that President Trump has proven once again that he can do things that other presidents, particularly Biden, could never do, and that is get the countries in the Middle East together. I think that's where the potential difference of this is that they have been able to get the other Arab countries from the Middle East to actually come together and agree that they would be part of the settlement process. It's my understanding that they are supposed to, these countries are supposed to send troops in to ensure the security of Gaza, that it's not just going to be turned back over to the Palestinians or Hamas, like you say, because that would be just a totally ridiculous. They've already proven they can't be trusted.
Well, they have to stop Hamas from killing people before they do that.
Right. And you know, Trump came out yesterday at his news conference, and he said if they don't disarm, We're going to disarm them if it takes force or military power to do it. And I think he's shown that he will do that. But I'm hoping that these Middle Eastern countries that signed this agreement will actually step forward and make sure that Gaza doesn't become another terrorist base, which is what, like you say, Mary,
what it has been.
I think what it's been.
Has used economic leverage. He has used force when he needed to. But the majority of the work that he's done in the Middle East has been economic leverage.
Well, I think also that he's talked to so many surrounding countries, and he's made Hamas an island unto themselves.
They're orphans.
They are orphans, so they will not get support from other places.
And hopefully, you know, with the degree to which Israel and we have gone after Iran. I'm hoping that they will be unable to support Hamas and Hezbollah and some of the other terrorist groups, which they've been doing. You know, they've been the main source of that, thanks to the money that Obama gave them and so on. So,
well, yeah, and Biden lifted all the oil sanctions.
Yeah. Yeah. And Iran is currently cracking down on its own people because it fears a rebellion, because the younger generation does not support the Ayatollahs, who are older than dirt.
I think one of the interesting things this week, two things that were interesting. One is President Trump did not win the Nobel Peace Prize. That's not a surprise.
So just to ask a history question, Mary, I've heard the names Hamas, the Palestinians, the Gazans, all these names, but is Hamas, was it originally like a political party?
No.
So where did Hamas come from?
It's a terrorist organization.
Well, we acknowledge that, but what does,
Hamas existed separate from the PLA.
Okay.
The PLO.
The PLO was a party.
Okay.
And Hamas and the PLO were aligned at one point, and then they split at one point.
So how did they win an election if they're not a party?
Well, they really didn't win the election. There was all kinds of shenanigans going on.
Okay.
They never got a majority of the votes. The election involved factions, and they managed to put enough factions together on their side so that they claimed victory and took over the country.
Okay.
It's called threat of violence.
Right. I struggle with my naive perception of right and wrong, and thinking that in a country that has an elected government, that you have a police force and people who are going to uphold the law and not let the just government fall to these militias. So that's where I struggle with understanding, is how did Hamas get the strength they have?
But that's the difference between Western civilization and the Muslim world. Theoretically, in Western civilization, now we've seen the law abused. We have seen that particularly in the past 10, 20 years, where the Justice Department was politicized.
Well, with the peace deal now, you said there's people being killed in the streets. Where is the people in power or the police force?
Hamas is killing them.
Right. Well, who's supposed to be, if Hamas has signed this peace deal, who is overseeing Hamas in Gaza right now?
Well, Hamas was supposed to disarm during the peace deal, and the IDF withdrew because that was part of the deal. As soon as the IDF withdrew, because in a sense the IDF was keeping the peace, Hamas went wild.
So are we saying that the police force or the...
There is no police force. There's only Hamas.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think as we've seen through understanding, no, I'm not going to say understanding, but yes, I'll use the word understanding, but the way the Quran is put together versus the way it was written as a series of peaceful documents, of peaceful events, until they got strength. And then it all of a sudden turned to a rebellious set of actions. When they have strength,
they kill you.
They'll eliminate you. Yes.
Now the question is:
when they don't have strength, they'll play.
And the last verse is verse of the sword. Find the children of the book, which are Christians and Jews, beleaguer them always, and kill them.
Yes. The thing that is going to be interesting is how long is Israel going to let Hamas do what it's doing before they say, you have broken
that'll the peace. It'll be up to Trump. He's the head of the peace board.
Okay.
And I think
I think from what he said yesterday, if he had heard that news conference, he was very adamant about if Hamas does not disarm, you know, and he didn't set a time frame, but he said they're going to go. He's going to make sure that Israel go in. I don't think we're going to send U.S. troops there, but he's adamant that they're going to make them do it one way or the other. And The thing that troubles me about the whole process is still the fact that Israel released over 2,000 of these convicted terrorists.
Yep.
And where did they go when they released? They went to Gaza. That's where they went, from what I understand. They didn't release them and send them to some other country. Because what other country would want them, of course?
Even if they had, they would have made their way back to Gaza.
So they went, you know, so they're back there, and now Hamas is 2,000 men stronger than they were. But I guess they felt like they had to do it, but it's really troubling.
This may be the step before Trump tells the IDF, go in and level the place.
But politically, what happened, you know, yesterday, the day before, whatever else? Trump gave a one-hour speech before the Knesset?
Yes.
He gave a one-hour speech and got a rousing response from them. We, up until just a few days ago, had that great divide within the Knesset that, we can't do anything until we get the hostages released. Mm-hmm. Well, now we have the hostages released, and now that's more united behind the government. What had been division now is more united, and then we're seeing the first fall down is we're not getting the remains of the other hostages that
no,
did
they've
not
messed
survive.
Up. They've messed up on that. But again, now that the hostages are back, and Hamas is not necessarily living up to the deal, there's no reason not to go in and level the place.
Did anybody notice no female hostages survived?
Right, I did. I did do that too. But are we saying in this that the entire population of Gaza is Hamas? There are no good guys. There are no innocents.
Well, the support for Hamas in Gaza was about 75%.
And
the celebration, the people who thought that October 7th was a good thing, the poll they took afterwards said 71% supported.
Well, I got an idea.
And there are Christian missionaries there.
So why don't we take out Hamas, and once it's cleared out, like you said, Mary, move the United Nations to Gaza? Well, you're gonna have a clean land, and everybody wants to protect it, so seems to me to be a good place to put it.
No prostitutes.
I'm being facetious.
You and you wouldn't
that.
Have parking jams. You wouldn't have the parking jams.
Mm. No, they would take on a different profile for sure.
Well, better place to keep peace.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Wow, that's a lot of guns. East 70 Pond is absolutely loaded with inventory, the most ever. Yes, we've said that before, but it's true. Handguns, shotguns, and rifles continue to roll in daily, but they're coming in faster than they are going out. So Drew is doing the only thing he knows to do, have a sale. A serious sale on hundreds of guns. Currently, East 70 Pond has a nice selection of Browning shotguns and rifles. Whether you hunt upland birds or down east ducks, Browning has the shotgun for you. Bolt action or semi-auto, nothing beats a Browning rifle for big game. Of course, East 70 has guns from nearly every top manufacturer in stock. So take advantage of outrageous deals on existing stock, including a large selection of AR-style rifles, magazines, and a vast selection of ammo. East 70 Pond is Craven County's largest and most well-stocked gun shop. The staff is knowledgeable, friendly, and provides exceptional service. Hurry in today and save big. East 70 Pond, across from the fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, Go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Now we're back, and again, we just ask you to visit them, let them know that you heard about them on the air. Alan, you wanted to take us in a different direction.
Yeah, there's a couple of court things happening in the courts, which every week we talk about, because there's so much going on with how the courts are influencing how we operate and influencing our country. One of the issues that is before the Supreme Court now is the issue about whether race can be used as a factor in determining congressional districts.
In gerrymandering,
you know, being designing it so that it comes out the way you want it to come out.
Yeah, and they've done that for decades.
Yeah, but the point is that they are considering this, and court came out and said you can't use race for admissions to college. And I think there's a pretty good chance that this Supreme Court now is going to come back and say race cannot be used as an issue in setting up congressional districts, which if that happened, that would really create a big change in the congressional, and I think it would really favor the Republicans if that happened.
Apparently, one of the arguments in this Louisiana case was that there is one congressional Democrat black district, and they're talking about needing a second congressional Democrat black district. And the question was, would you do the same gerrymandering to create a white Democrat district?
Well, we did have majority-minority districts in North Carolina for a long time that were mandated because of, I don't even know why, but I...
Voting Rights Act.
I couldn't remember what it was, but I know that, like, the northeast side of the state, we had at least two majority-minority districts that I'm aware of.
Sounds like separate but equal, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
One of the things that I think is interesting with this, it's almost like the Democrats have made the assumption, which is rapidly being proven false, that the black voters will vote Democrat. And the Democrats have lost a lot of the black vote.
But some of the northeast states where there are no Republican districts, they aren't.
That has nothing to do with black. That has to do with gerrymandering.
Point. Somebody needs to sue those states and say that those Republican voters are disenfranchised and it's unconstitutional.
The whole process of how we do this with this, quote, gerrymandering, carving out districts that make no geographic sense. I know that there are some rules where they are required to try to keep counties intact and so on, but the way it happens, it's really troubling to me because it's so open to manipulation. There's another Supreme Court case that came up that was heard last week, and that involves transgender issues. And what happened in Colorado, there was a law passed by their legislature that prohibits medical professionals from counseling children or parents of children against taking medications or having surgery that permanently alters their gender. So it's basically the state of Colorado was overriding the ability of medical professionals to exercise their
to give medical
professional
to give
judgment.
Medical advice.
Yeah. That's correct.
So are they saying that this child who's 12 years old has more intelligence and rights than a legal adult?
That's what this. That's what Colorado's the state of Colorado. The legislature
says.
Well, now, I notice one thing about leftist politics and legal reasoning. It's not consistent. It doesn't have any bedrock principles. It's all relative to what the issue is and when in time it arises. So since this country was born, unless you were an adult, minors couldn't contract. They can't get an apartment because they can't contract. You know, they can't vote. They can't buy liquor.
But they can cut their genitalia off.
Because the trans rights people are putting pressure on the courts, and the doctors see a place to make money, and you know, it's trendy. There's a actress in Hollywood who has three children, and they're all bipolar. They're bipolar.
They probably are. They probably are.
And I was going to say, we went through a period of time where schools had to teach 10% of your teaching had to be LGBT, and this is before they added the Q. It had to be LGBT stuff, and come to find out that the actual population percentage is maybe 3%, and it has got nothing to do with what you have to teach. You can't teach mathematics using LGBT as your factors.
One of the things that I came across a while back in doing an article on the whole transgender thing was the story of a little boy who was about 6 years old who told his parents he wanted to be a girl. Thank God he had common sense parents who said, you're a boy, you're going to stay a boy, but let's figure out what this is about. And they took him to a psychologist, and they uncovered what was behind this. He had a younger sister that was handicapped, and he thought if he was a girl, he would get more of his parents' attention. So they dealt with the boy, helped him understand, you know, why his sister got more attention, understanding that he is a boy. He never transitioned. He is growing up to be a very normal little boy. Thank God those parents had the common sense not to make a life-altering decision on a kid who was 6 or 7 years old.
Well, don't forget, they were lucky enough to get a psychologist or a psychiatrist that wasn't woke.
Yeah, who was willing to find the root of the problem and deal with the problem rather than do damage.
And they weren't living in current state of Colorado,
yeah,
where that medical professional wouldn't be able to do
what that woman did.
What you
yeah
just described, they wouldn't have yeah been able to discourage
but
it.
Those same progressive people are the ones that has said all through COVID to follow the science. Well, I would think that science would tell you until you reach puberty, you do not know what your sexual preference is.
Well, I think it goes beyond puberty, in my opinion.
Well, your hormones, you know.
Yeah, your hormones don't really kick in until puberty, yeah.
Because at 5 years old,
you can't go out and buy alcohol, you can't go out and buy a gun, but you're going to have your gender altered.
You can't get your ears pierced.
I was just trying to point out one more discrepancy in
the logic.
But anyway, there are those court issues. Another thing I would hope that the court will deal with at some point, and just getting back to this idea of the redistricting, is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, wasn't it the Biden administration that really pushed the idea that when they were counting the census, they would count illegals?
Yes.
That they would be counted to form the congressional districts, isn't
yes
that correct?
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be stopped.
Well, Trump's
people
already
they're here illegally, and we're counting them and making them the basis by which we are assigning
Toss
our representatives.
Up. Toss it out.
Trump has already said that we're not. In fact, he wants a new census right away instead of waiting for 2030. And we're not going to count the illegals. The Democrats have concentrated illegals in these sanctuary cities. And when you count them, you get more heads, you get more money from the government, and you get more seats for the legislature. So they've said, I've heard that the Democrats gain 19 seats by counting the illegals in the census.
Let's take that one step further. I mean, former vice president candidate, was it Tim Walz? In his state now, there is a law that illegals with licenses can vote.
By license, with a driver's license?
With a driver's license.
Driver's license.
They can vote.
But they can't vote in federal elections.
Well, I don't know.
My understanding is isn't that correct, Pat, that the federal election law determines who can vote in a federal election? They can do. I know that some
Who's going to stop them?
Yeah,
it's just like you said, some of the cities they were allowed to vote too. You're right.
Yeah, who's going to enforce it?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Some of the things that we talk about that don't make sense, I can take back to the school thing too with the illegal thing. We have in every single school in Craven County teachers for English as a second language. Any student that is in this school system needs to be able to be English, but the first question would be, and I hate to sound the Gestapo type because that's where it's going to be, you know, show me your papers. But that is the first question. How much money are we spending with equal representation of people who have no legal right to be here?
Yes, that's absolutely. Now, there's another situation that gets really interesting. In the state of Oregon, which we know has some interesting laws, they're planning on spending $1.5 billion on programs, health benefits to illegal aliens between 2025 and 27.
Who is trying to do that?
Oregon. During that same time, they're spending $717 million on Oregon State Police.
That's backwards.
Now the question
is, how much of Oregon is trying to secede?
Excuse me?
How much of Oregon is trying to secede?
A large chunk.
Yeah.
They want to join Idaho.
For one. Yeah. I don't know whether it's the whole state or just the big cities.
No, the big cities are all Democrat.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And the people that want to secede are tired of
dealing with it. But that's
being overridden.
That's twice as much money on illegals as on your state police in a state that has a serious crime problem.
I recently wrote an article on this topic about the real cost to taxpayers of illegals.
Mm-hmm.
And just to quote a couple of things, that in 2022, nationwide, mm-hmm. it's estimated we spent $182 billion. That amounts to, per illegal alien, almost $9,000 per illegal alien for the year. And per U.S. taxpayer was almost $1,200. So each one of us that are paying taxes are paying approximately $1,200 a year to support illegals.
This is a GoFundMe thing, really. That's crazy.
I just don't understand how anybody, thinks it's okay. It's not about human rights. It's about the rule of law. And if we don't have rule of law, we don't have borders and we don't have a country.
You know, additionally, I would add that when rule of moral laws, I would add that.
And we can't go to Mexico and get those rights. We can't go to anywhere in South America and cross those borders and be protected and favored.
No, we can't. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters, the CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. We're back. We're going to continue with things that are going on within our court system, I guess.
Fannie Willis's name has been mentioned in the list of people that are going to be facing the grand jury that's currently in, has been seated. They're expecting to indict John Bolton again next week. That'll be interesting. And in fact, if people don't know, John Bolton still has AOL at home. Anybody remember that?
America Online.
Yeah.
Yeah, but dial-up just quit.
Right. They just ran out of business.
Just a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
He was sending classified information home to his wife using AOL. And part of the reason is for national security purposes that's totally unsecure and that foreign hackers had intercepted that information.
I do use AOL for anything I really want the Chinese to know about.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Are you sending false information?
Yeah.
any rate, Letitia James may be also facing more indictments. Because the mortgage fraud that she's accused of right now is not the only mortgage fraud that she has involved herself in. The one where she pretended to be her father's wife, I think, is barred by statute of limitations. But there's another house. And the problem with the house that they've indicted her for already is that there's a North Carolina probation absconder living in that house. Now, she testified to the investigating committee that she's been living there for 3 years and she doesn't pay rent. Because whether or not...
And it is her legal address, yes.
Okay, but whether or not Tish, the mortgage fraud, requires that she used it as a rental property. So this person went and said, I don't pay rent. Ha ha. Well, here's another problem. Tish has been reporting rental income and paying taxes on it. So who's lying? Well, I suspect that the person that's living in the house is getting welfare because she has 3 children, and she may be paying some sort of rent out of the welfare, which means the whole thing is a scam to soak the welfare and go directly to Letitia. So that's a different problem, and I don't know if that's been raised in that thing. But the criminal that is living in the house is a grandniece or something. She is a probation absconder from North Carolina, and she has a long rap sheet, including assault against law enforcement officers, grand larceny, possession of burglary tools. I mean, she's quite a winner in the crime sweepstakes.
Refresh my memory. Is the bit about the 3 units versus the 4 units, is that Letitia?
Four versus five.
That's Letitia. It's four versus five.
Can you go through that just for a second?
The house that she has that has 5 units, the certificate of occupancy that's issued by the state says it has 5 units. She claimed when she refinanced it that it had 4 units, which allowed her to get a lower interest rate, something like 2.5, under HAMP.
So that's more mortgage fraud.
The five units was considered a commercial property. The 4 units could be considered a residential property.
And I noticed that somebody from the government came by to look at that building, and one of the neighbors in the building came out and harassed them. We know who lives here. We know what you're doing here. You need to leave. Blah 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 blah. You know, save Tish.
Well, the ironic thing is I heard that they had some, you know, on the TV programs, they have these lawyers that come in and they give what some of the requirements are to get at a conviction. And this person was talking about, well, you have to show intent. Well, if she didn't know, if this was not intentional, then she needs to be put in to have her brain checked for her IQ if this happened by accident, which we never believe.
And Alan,
let me point out, intent is not even an issue in a criminal case. There is no requirement to prove intent.
Okay.
You have to prove there was a crime and that this person committed it. You do not have to prove intent.
I think it's rich that this person ran for elected office based on getting Trump, and no one's above the law, but she acted above the law. But now we see her on TV complaining about this weaponized DOJ. Well, I just think it's rich to see.
That's what the DOJ, that's what and the Democrats do.
And she, in fact, has put other people in jail for doing the same thing.
For mortgage fraud.
She has prosecuted them for that exact same thing.
Yeah. Gee, a Democrat, that's a hypocrite. Shocker.
Well, I don't know that I would even say Democrat. I would just say elitist progressive. I don't care what party you are, because there are California Republicans that are elitists, and
yes,
and they want the high density residential areas just like the progressive Democrats do. The rich get richer, and
You're always going back to the money. But
yeah,
sometimes you have to pay attention to whether they're Democrats or Republicans, particularly in a state like New York, where they're mostly Democrats.
I'm just naive. I keep saying it. I go back to good and evil. I just, I don't tend to associate.
You haven't heard what lawyers learn in law school, that legal doesn't mean moral.
Oh, my. Now you've just ruined my whole day.
Frederick Bastiat.
Two other things that I'd like to bring up just briefly, if I could, that are related to this. We're talking about courts and the law. Obviously, everybody knows about that case in Charlotte with
Melania?
Arena, that she got killed in the subway by the person who had a history of mental illness and so on and so forth. Okay. He should have been locked up, in my opinion. There's a recent case in Kentucky that was even more horrific, if you could imagine that. And this particular case, this individual had, again, a history of mental illness. He broke into a family's home, and he went in and he stabbed to death a six-year-old child. Mm. Then when his parents heard the noise and the commotion, he attacked them. So he attacked the rest of the family. He got a 20-year sentence, but in Kentucky, because he had a history of mental illness, there was this restriction on how long he could serve, and he actually is scheduled to get out of prison in November. And his parents, of course, up in arms about it. But I just want to bring up this issue about the relationship between mental illness and crime. There's a tendency, I think, when we in the law in this country, that if you're mentally ill, then you get away with things. It is used as an excuse, or it's used as a reason not to hold a person accountable. Now, I worked for the Department of Correction for 30 years. We used to do risk assessments on inmates that were getting ready to go out on parole, primarily parole cases. And I always taught my staff that the existence of a severe mental illness was an increased risk factor. That was a fact that you had to take into consideration, that would increase the risk that this person would reoffend, not something to mitigate it. And, years ago, we used to have state institutions, state hospitals, that would confine these people indefinitely if they were not cooperating with treatment, and it couldn't be affirmed that they would actually be safe in the community. But the liberals came along in the late 60s, early 70s, and they did away with the state hospitals. And they did away with these crime sections. They had the criminally insane. We need to go back to that. There are some of these people, like these cases that I just related, these people should be confined indefinitely.
There's a stigma for mental illness that, under the social emotional learning and the DEI and all of that mainstreaming, it's about people's feelings, and, oh, you poor thing, it's not your fault you're crazy, so jail's not the right place for you, but I totally agree, Alan. The institutions for the criminally insane. You don't have to have the when they put people in solitary confinement and all that kind of stuff. That the institution wouldn't look like a prison, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It would be more of a Dorothea Dix type of place that they did close down. But you know, it was a secure, guarded facility.
Well, they had within those hospitals, they had wards that were essentially prisons.
Mm-hmm.
They had bars,
and they needed them.
Yeah, and they needed them because they would escape and they would go out and commit crimes
so
again.
So we don't even have those places anymore.
No, they closed them down.
So where do the criminally insane go?
They go into prison.
Or
if they're convicted,
or
they go to a local jail, then they're out within a few days. Or
thanks to Governor Michael Dukakis in Massachusetts, they all went out on the street and became our street problem.
Yeah.
Homeless people.
Yeah.
I mean, we do not adequately care, number one, for our returning veterans with PTSD.
Right.
Or with people who have other mental problems. Our society has left them in the dust, and we need to go back and fix that.
And just to go back with what you're just saying, Mary, I know somebody right now who is going through a very painful divorce, and it's because her husband has PTSD along with a traumatic brain injury.
Oh.
Well, it has caused him to be extremely violent, and she has to protect her children.
That's right.
But he walks free.
And he will be a danger.
And he will be a danger, right.
Yeah.
But where's the help for him, even, you know? So he's been identified as, yes, you have these things. So you go walk and work and do your normal daily life, but then when you blow your stack and hurt somebody, it's time to do something.
The other thing you don't know, would he be willing to receive the help offered?
That is exactly the point. That is the security of the people comes first. Then if you could do something to ameliorate the cause
yes.
of the problem, that's secondary in my opinion. And I think we got it backwards. What we're doing now is we're saying, all right, for some of these people, all right, you have PTSD, you have this, so we're going to let you sleep on the streets, and this is ridiculous.
That's what I'm saying, Alan. They don't fix the problem until they've hurt somebody.
Yeah.
They need to prevent them from hurting
somebody.
Some
of the problems are not fixable.
But in today's
wants to be fixed.
But in today's society, an awful lot of the treatment is, yes, I saw them this week. Checkbox. I saw them. Did I do anything about it? No, I didn't do anything about it. Yeah. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Okay, we're going to mix the pot up. Where are we going to go?
Ice. We're going to talk about ice as an addendum to
the courts.
There's a federal judge, female, and I think she's a Biden appointee, who has ruled that ICE has, I think, 90 days to take down their fence that they put up around the ICE facility for safety. And the article didn't say whether or not they were appealing it. I certainly hope they are. But Where was this? I can't remember. It's not Chicago.
Was it Portland?
No, one Portland. Okay. Any rate, the city sued, saying that the fence kept them from accessing a public street. So it was a public safety issue because they couldn't send the fire department there. People couldn't cross the street, blah, blah, blah. And the federal judge had no apparently concerned for the ICE agents that were under daily attack. So I hope they don't have to take the fence down. We'll see what happens on appeal. Now their latest thing I saw, I think, in Chicago was two illegals in a car that rammed an ICE vehicle.
Yeah, I saw that.
What happened after that, excuse me, a crowd gathered. And what they did was, instead of supporting the police or the ICE, the crowd came in and they started throwing rocks and they started attacking the law enforcement people, including, I believe, this some of the state police. And the ICE agents had to use tear gas to control the mob. So
there was a complaint because the Portland PD had shown up, but they didn't have gas masks. So when the feds used tear gas, the Portland police were injured, and the mob was free to throw rocks.
My assumption would be that the mob is also illegals.
I don't think so.
We don't know that. I would also point out that Portland was the host of the naked bike protest.
And that was comic relief.
I want to point out that many of these protesters are middle-aged and elderly people.
And fat.
And that's just not a sight that you want to see.
But you know, it's crazy. They're naked and wearing helmets.
I'm not even going. I want to talk a minute. This weekend, when this show is being aired, is the weekend of the No Kings protest. And it's not totally related, but I want to talk about something that has come out about the money behind Antifa. Now, I did see an interview of someone the other night who was complaining about the peace deal because he said he wasn't going to get any more protest money to pay his rent. He was worried about not being able to pay his rent because he wasn't going to be protesting anymore and nobody was going to pay him. Now, there is a group called the Government Accountability Institute, and they are referring to the groups that fund Antifa as Riot Inc. And I'm just going to read you some of the names of the people and the companies. The amount of money is unbelievable.
Most of them aren't companies, they're foundations.
Arabella is a company, isn't
it? Tides, Ford Foundation,
Rockefeller, yeah. Arabella, $7,821.
What is Arabella?
Insurance company.
Wonderful. Buffett, That's a company.
Mm-hmm.
Ford, Rockefeller Foundations, Singham. I don't know that one.
Singham is interesting. He is an American billionaire. And as far as I know, he's the one that's living in China. He's a hard communist.
Okay.
And he's sending a lot of money over here to fund anti-government actions as his contribution to the downfall of American government.
Well, he only sent $610,000. I mean,
well, that's not,
you know, that's pocket change.
That's only to Antifa.
Soros. And Tides. Tide is the big spender. Tides is the big spender. $18,765,690. And then the pro-Hamas funders, again, Arabella, Buffett, Ford, a group called Foreign Influence. I don't know anything about them, but they were only $87,000.
I don't think that's a group. I think that's a... Just a term.
Term, okay. Well, that was only $87,000, so they're a pittance. Rockefeller, $6 million. Soros, $33 million. And Tides, $12 million. The grand total of the money that is coming in to fund the protests is $159,708,245. Now, some of these groups are funded through these NGOs. So now we're finding out why the Democrats and some other people are fighting so hard to save the NGOs. This is where some of the NGO money is going to undermine our own government that is paying them.
Well, the money from those corporations and foundations go to NGOs, who then distribute it mm-hmm. according to their needs.
And back to politicians who support their agendas.
I just want to comment on one thing you said, Mary. You just said that George Soros, that he contributed $32
million. $33
million, yeah. $33 million, okay.
That's only to the Islam.
I understand. He,
$5 million to
all
the
right.
others.
Here's what I want to comment on. Charlie Kirk received yesterday from President Trump the president's, the freedom...
Medal of Freedom.
Medal of Freedom.
Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest honor that can be given to a civilian. Okay? He deserved it. Biden, when he was president, he awarded that same award or gave that same award to George Soros. Now, here you've got someone who's Charlie Kirk fighting for the American way, a patriot, a true believer in what America stands for, he gets it, deservedly. And then you have Biden giving Soros, who has not only funds this group you mentioned, behind Antifa and so on, but also was funding all these district attorneys mm-hmm. that were actually committed to not enforcing the law. And Biden gives him the highest civilian award. I mean, if you had to have one example of what to expect from one group as compared to another group, that's all you need to know right there.
There was a No Kings demonstration in New Bern a couple of years ago, and someone who I will not name, who grew up in New Bern his whole life and pretty much knew everybody in New Bern, happened to be on the second floor of one of the buildings downtown, where he could overlook the crowd. And he was looking at the crowd, and again, this person who has lived in New Bern all his life, knows an awful lot of people, said there were three people in the crowd he recognized. These are imported protesters. Keep that in mind when you watch the news reports.
And this No Kings thing, that isn't that oriented towards their fear or their belief or what the message they're trying to get out is that Trump wants to become a king, he wants to be a dictator. Isn't that what this No King
yes.
thing is all about, which is a bunch of hogwash? And everybody knows that.
Well, the
and
comment...
The thing is, the No Kings thing, I think that's related also to the shutdown of the government. There's some people who believe that the Democrats, particularly Schumer, will not release his people to vote for the continuing resolution till after the No Kings demonstration.
Yeah, I read
that. Because they don't want to be protested.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be subject to what they might say about him. So he wants to wait. It'll be interesting to see. The No Kings thing is Saturday.
Yeah.
It'll be see if they vote.
The interesting comment in this article about the funding, and this is talking about these protest organizations, to truly stop the bleeding, America must go after the bloodstream, the NGO networks and offshore foundations that bankroll domestic destabilization.
Well, Pat, this is a question for you. My understanding with this No Kings and trying to go against Trump being a dictator, my understanding is that is why Trump has let a lot of the executive decisions that have been challenged by inferior courts go to court, so that the court makes the decision instead of Trump being, quote, the king. What's your feeling on that?
The decisions that are going to court are Trump's decisions.
And the court is taking
the ruling is coming from the court, though, instead of it being like an executive order.
So he's abiding by court decisions as they go
on. So he's not acting like a king.
No,
but I'm saying he could. Just like with these inferior courts from the district level.
As Obama had said, I have a phone and a pen.
But according to the Constitution, those inferior courts do not have superiority over the executive
That's
branch.
That's true.
So I'm saying that Trump could act a king and could wield that sword, but he's yielding to the court so that he's proving, in my opinion, he's proving that he's not being the king.
You go again, trying to make a principle. I told you, the left has no bedrock principles.
One of the things, I was listening to an interview this morning of an Israeli judge. I think he's a judge in Israel, but he's a judicial type. He has been a judge. And he was talking about the worldwide elitist move to govern countries, Israel, U.S., and others, by elitist judges rather than by the original constitutions of those countries. Evidently, the problem that we have here of the elitist judges trying to rule the place is also happening in Israel and some other places.
I wouldn't call them elitists. I would call them progressives.
Okay.
Democrats.
No, I would call them kings.
because
they think they're the ultimate.
They are complaining. There have been several groups of judges anonymously complaining about the Supreme Court for overruling them, saying you don't have our back. Well, that's not the purpose of the Supreme Court.
Right.
And if they would instead look inwards, do I have jurisdiction? Am I abiding by the law? They would have their answer. The inferior court, Trump has to follow the law. If he were to ignore, like Biden did, remember the student loan bailout? He ignored
yes.
it. If a Republican did that, all hell would break loose.
But you're hurting my feelings.
Yeah.
Can I end the show with some good news?
Sure.
Last night, Tuesday night, which was Charlie Kirk's birthday, and it was a national day of remembrance for Charlie Kirk, endorsed by the Senate, the House, and the President. We had we sponsored in Fairfield Harbor a Charlie Kirk remembrance event last night, and we had 125 people come to that event, and we basically showed, we had some people speak about some of his principles, and we had some of his videos and so on, but it was a very well-attended event, and I think it was something that was really very gratifying to me, and I'm glad we got it done.
Well, folks, I think that's about it for the show, and I just wanted to say thank you for listening. But the fourth Thursday, CCTA meets at the Moore's Barbecue in New Bern. Early voting.
Early voting starts tomorrow.
Have a great week.